This is loud. This is good. Okay, I'm right after lunch. You're all in a lunch comatose. How was lunch today anyway? What was it? Eh? Oh, nice. Good. At least you had something to eat. I didn't eat today. We're here in the largest room in the entire conference. And you're all back there hiding. I can still see you. But we're here to talk about something that's very important: IP address management. And I'm surprised there's this many people in the room, to tell you the truth, because I thought this is one of those more obtuse sessions that no one would be interested in going to. And it's one of those sessions that I decided to submit anyway as a suggestion, just because I believe it's so important that we do good IP address management. I got burned in my previous life as an administrator by being too lax with my IP address management. And this is a solution that is now part of the Server 2012 feature set that you can install. It's absolutely free. And the neat thing about it is it literally was made by this teeny tiny small product group in India and was added in. And it made it all the way through the revised cycle to what it is, because it's such a great thing. It replaces solutions that cost tens of thousands of dollars that you pay big bucks for. Or it replaces solutions that are a bit more like this. Paper. Terrible. How do you know what happens to your IP addresses if they're on a piece of paper that's outdated as soon as you write it down, basically? Who here looks after the IP addressing scheme inside their environments, back in their work environment? That's most of the people in the room. Everyone else, you decided to tag along because you're with your buddy or something like that, or what? Or you find the address space so stimulating, you want to come and look in and see how IP address stuff works for IPv4. Okay, so we're going to be talking about server IP addressing and IP address management. I didn't bring out my lovely little maple syrup, but I still have 3 maple syrup to give away. They cleaned out my article, so you don't have my little article talking about the maple syrup theft that happened in Canada. I was not part of that. The maple syrup that you're going to get if you ask questions is clean. It is not tainted. It's not part of the maple syrup scandal. So this is going to be talking about specifically what is Windows Server 2012 IPAM. It's not a, I don't know if you guys have this in Australia, back in North America, it's stuff called PAM. You spray on a pan, and it's like a canola oil spray that makes stuff nonstick. It's not this. This is not the Apple version of PAM. This is IPAM, IP address management. It's a hot topic. Basically what it is, how it works, what you can do with it, and also better and more informed is what you can do to integrate it into your systems that you have right now. You can walk out today and install Server 2012. You can download it. You can install it. And then you can install IPAM, and off you go with your existing environment. You don't have to do an entire rip and replace. I know there's a couple of gentlemen that can look in here at the front row. They've gone ahead and already installed IPAM, and we're just like, wow, it's so cool. You can do all sorts of great stuff with it. The takeaways from this basically is that IPAM will complement what you already have in place for DHCP and DNS. It does not replace it. It reduces your operational expenses. That's the fancy term they basically say. It gives you back your sanity from having to maintain spreadsheets, maintain pieces of paper, jotting stuff down on little post-it notes and sticking them to your monitors. For what IP address ranges are free that you could statically assign to individual servers as you roll them out. It also goes in and can integrate into external systems because this is back-ended by PowerShell, which means you can go through and do all sorts of really cool stuff. And then finally, it's very cost-effective because it is F-R-E-E and included inside Server 2012. I get to have the executive clicker up here because it's such a big stage. The big red button means backwards and green means forwards. I still mess it up. So with IPAM, first of all, what the heck is it? Well, does this ever happen to you? You need to be able to track your organization's address space and know exactly which addresses are in use in different locations, different buildings, different floors, different switches. Or maybe you need to find, you know, you have a new server that comes in, you got to figure out which my IP address I can assign to it statically as you're installing it. And it's like, ah, oh, damn, what was the last one that we used anyway? I think it was 10.1.26.45, but I can't really tell. Let's go check the spreadsheet. Let's go check that piece of paper. that's out there. Maybe more reactively, you end up figuring out that all of a sudden you're out of IP addresses and you get help desk calls. And like, what's going on? It's like, for some reason in a particular building, there's a influx of new devices and addresses are not expiring out of DHCP leases. And you end up with a scope that becomes overcommitted and you end up with machines not working. Or maybe you need to go in and change an option. Like about this, wouldn't it be nice to be able to say, I just had a problem with my DNS server, got some bad cache in it right now, and it's down and offline, I got to be able to fix it, and I've got 75 DHCP scopes that all reference that particular DNS server. Can I just like select all the servers and say edit DNS entry 009, fill in the proper one, and then go? Maybe adding a new lab, some new capacity, you want to be able to reserve some stuff out. Maybe you just want to have a better way of tracking stuff. Well, all these different solutions basically are IP address problems that we all face with day to day. Anything that I missed? What's plaguing you with IP address ranges right now? Anybody? Complexity. Keeping your VLAN straight, keeping your subnet straight, divvying them up by building, how you logically do it. Who here actually designed their IP subnetting network structure for their organization? Put up your hand. It's not all that many. Who manages it? Almost everybody. So if you didn't create it yourself, what was the logic behind how it was done? It's like one of those things, it's like one of those things with Active Directory. When you designed your Active Directory, if you were the one that designed it, you know why you'd organize it this way and how it's been modified. And then you go and you get promoted, or you leave the company, or you get hit by a bus. And then whatever it is that happened for an Active Directory design gets handed to someone and it's a book if you documented it. It's even worse for IP addresses. IP addressing schemes tend to be a little bit more, based on the size of your organization, can be a bit more complex to pass on that information to other people. This is what some of the things that they come back with and you end up managing and working with. So how do you manage IP addresses today? Who here has paper notes that they track all their IP addresses on for the static addresses of their servers? Does anybody have, don't be shy, put up your hand, you're good. We're all friends here. So it's absolutely true. I used to personally have a mental range that whenever I made a new subnet of, let's say, a 24-bit subnet mask that's being used, so let's say 192.168.1.x, I would always reserve the first 10 addresses and never being used. I then would go in and make the next 20 addresses from 11 to 30 to 11 to 31. I'd reserve them for individual servers, and then from 50 to 200, I'd make that part of my DHCP scope. I'd have these extra buffer areas for different sort of things. That's just what I did because I was the guy that was designing it. I get hit by a bus. I move on. Sally looks after it now. She has her own way of doing it, too. So spreadsheets, you're a bit more high-tech instead of paper. It's now electronic. You can now centralize it someplace, and people can look at it, which is good. There's absolutely no capital expenditures involved because you've already bought the license for Excel or using Notepad. It's very simple to use. Works great for small networks. Downside, generally speaking, it is labor-intensive. And the best part I like about it is, as soon as you hit save, it is out of date because someone else edited it and added their own stuff to it. At least now, if you store this up on a SkyDrive or on SharePoint, you now have multi-people accessing and multi-people editing at the same time. So you have a little bit of better of a chance to make sure it's up to date. But anyway, inflexible, absolutely does not scale, especially for large enterprises. So what other options do you have? In-house tools. I did this session and delivered it in Redmond to a conference called Tech Mentor. And there's one guy in the back. Does anyone have their own internal automated way of managing IP addresses and requesting addresses, like a website or some kind of an internal tool they made themselves? Put up your hands nice and high. There's at least one, two, three, four, maybe half a dozen people. Fantastic. It was custom made yourselves? Great. Now you need to make it work with IPv6. Is it going to work? No, everyone's shaking their head. Absolutely not. High level of automation, you can go in and say, provisioning 15 new servers, go, here you go, here's your addresses, makes a database, updates it all, and you can view it on a nice little web page, it's all good. So that's good. You can possibly customize the way you happen to work. But again, the developer that wrote that for you maybe was an intern, maybe was a student, maybe was someone that's actually moved on again from the company again. How do you get it updated to work with the next version of stuff? Can be very expensive to add new capabilities to it as well. And then finally, your third-party solution or your commercial appliances generally have a good level of automation. They got a very rich feature set for what you can do with the system. But you end up with a very, generally speaking, high price point for having to manage this. So with Server 2012, IPAM overview, generally, it's an absolutely inbox solution. It works. It works integrated and seamlessly with Microsoft DHCP and DNS systems. Your servers do not have to be 2012 servers. It does to launch this and to install it, but it can manage 2008, 2008 R2 systems. And I'll talk about how to work with other party systems later on. But basically, this is Server 2012. To kind of give you a breakdown of how this all works, let's go down around the side here. The very first thing that it does is it looks after ASM, or otherwise known as address space management. Think of this as the day-to-day stuff you have to do if you're managing networks and managing servers within your network. We're talking about organizing your networks so they make sense, documenting what they are, monitoring how they're doing, managing entries inside of them, managing static entries that you have to make as opposed to having to go inside individual tools, and works for both IPv4 and IPv6. I will fess up, all my demos, to keep it simple, are going to be on IPv4, but basically everything I'm doing could also be done with your IPv6 address range as well. So it's not instantly out of date, so you can do it both ways. Neat thing is, if you have a very large network, it's able to go off and discover servers that are running these different services, and then apply group policy to them, because of the way you have it configured. And then when that's done, you're able to then have them brought into your database, and it queries them on a regular basis that you can schedule to always have updated information about the actual validity of the scopes, how cram they are, if they have any error messages, sort of stuff. So automatic discovery is built in of Microsoft-based systems. It also works for multi-server management to be able to go through and do things like I mentioned, of being able to edit one massive entry across all the different scopes in one spot because of automation. And then finally, the part that I didn't talk about as of yet is audit. Has anyone ever gotten the question before by some in the organization that says, hey, who is using IP address 10.1.27.36 last Thursday? Can you answer that? No. Probably not. Well, you can with IPAM. It's able to go in and actually get authentication logs and IP address information, save it locally inside its local database, and then make it so that you can query that information and give information back to the auditors as they ask them. Wouldn't it be cool to be able to say, hey, I wonder what all the IP addresses are that my Mac iPads are using. Wouldn't it be cool to find out what all my Android Slate devices are using from an IP address perspective? And then block those off for being able to manage them differently. You can do that with IPAM. I'm not used to such a big stage. I'm going to get my exercise today. So, what are some things that we can talk about? Well, I've kind of tantalized you and teased you with what the capabilities of what's there. Let's take a look at all these different components. It's built in box. You have to install it. It is a feature that you have to install. It starts off with simply the IPAM server. It uses what's known as the Windows internal database. Simply think of it as a nice little simple jet database. It's on the local box. It's all there. It's all good. And it's running. Then you have the IPAM client. The IPAM client is simply the management console, which is part of RSAT tools that you can install on your Windows 8 system. You don't have to TS into the IPAM server to be able to manage your systems. Then on top of that, you have the ability to go off and to control and to query DHCP servers, DNS servers, domain controllers, and network policy servers that are part of network access control or network NAP and NAC and that sort of stuff. The IPAM server is the one that goes out and actually contacts those different systems on a scheduled basis once they've been authorized to be managed, and then queries them and works with them and does stuff with them, and then displays it back to the IPAM IPAM client. These servers are, as I mentioned, Server 2008, 2008 R2, and also Server 2012. Then you have this great level of granularity for who can do what on that individual system. So you can actually go through and, with peace of mind, give out the ability to have an overall administrator, have someone that's only responsible for assigning IP addresses to servers with an ASM administrator. You can have some that are responsible for the management of the individual scopes and multi-server management. You then have individual users to simply go off in the query and to work with it. And finally, you also have the ability to have literally audit people, where all they can do is simply find out who's using what addresses and what they're doing with it. And they could do that all within the IPAM client console that's up there. Lastly, if you needed to, because that WID database is getting to be a bit too cumbersome, you can scale this out to whatever size you like. What you do is you basically scope out your deployment so that individual servers, IPAM servers, are responsible for 15, 20, 150, you choose, number of DHCP servers and DNS servers, and then you carve up the next batch for the next one, next batch for the next one. It's not a highly available service. It does a query, agentless, pick up the data, work and crunch it all locally. And then finally, the part that I haven't talked about just yet is, because it uses PowerShell as the back end, and I know how much you guys absolutely love PowerShell and the stuff you can do with it, you're able to actually go in and take information from third-party systems. Say you happen to have, for some reason, a Linux box using BootP or something like that for BootP systems, and you've got a bunch of addresses and scope information out of that. If you can get the data out of that system into a text file, and then you massage that text file to follow the CSV format that IPAM uses to import, you can bring virtually any data you need to into your database. You can actually get all those spreadsheets that you've been saving around for your IP address management into your actual IPAM database very easily with a little bit of massaging. So the external data configuration, basically you have the ability to import CSV through the IPAM user interface. You have the ability to export it back out again. Here's a little hint for you. If you don't know what format that CSV is, you don't feel like reading the technical articles about it, go into the data, put in a sample entry for what you're trying to manage, and then go and do an export to see what the format comes out as. Massage it inside Excel, save it back out again, try to get your data to match up, and then import it back in again. Wash, rinse, repeat. And then also you have the ability to do some very cool PowerShell integration from different types of data sources, and then have it go back out again as well. Another example of that could be a nice automated synchronization process that runs as a scheduled task to go off into query, maybe all of your Active Directory sites and subnets that are listed inside the Active Directory. Compare those to what you have in your database to make sure they're up to date. As a new site comes online, it comes online inside IPAM as well. Cool stuff. So, using IPAM. Did I go too far? No, I didn't. Okay. Here's our scenario. Let's pretend we're a company called Contoso. Let's pretend that, we're a mining company for Martian asteroids looking for unobtainium, some weird stuff, and then that it's absolutely growing gangbusters because everyone wants to have it. Basically, we're just simply a growing organization. We look like this. Basically, multiple domains. We've got four different buildings, building 1, 2, 3, 4. And we've got an IP address ranges that are in use with a 10.1, 10.2, 10.3, 10.4, different network IDs with a 16-bit subnet mask, so we've got a large enough organization. But it's growing. We need to be able to manage things in a bit more efficient fashion. The first area that we talked about was this place called IP Address Space Management, or ASM. The way ASM works basically is you go in and you have to visualize how you organize your IP addresses in the first place and be able to get that into the tool, and you have to get it so that it matches up to your DHCP scopes and your information that's not inside your DHCP scopes. So basically IPAM will go in, query your DNS and DHCP servers, bring in as much information as it can, but then you have to go in and massage it. You then go in and you are able to go in and add in your own ranges that are statically assigned. Those are those ones that I mentioned, like the first 20 addresses are reserved for my servers. The next 50 addresses are reserved for my manually statically assigned workstations. The next batch of 200 addresses is left over for anybody in the scope. You basically plan that all out. Go ahead and then monitor how it's going with utilization, warnings about whether or not you're starting to trend upwards or downwards to be able to manage stuff. And then finally go through and track changes. Yes, once you start managing things with IPAM, If I make a change to a scope or change to an address range, it will actually go in and tell me who did it, when it was done, and then reverse it potentially if you needed to. So enough of me talking about this. Let me show you some of this stuff. That is numero 7, which is this one. Yes. Okay. I do have Zoomit installed, so we're good. So in this environment, I have four domain controllers. I also happen to have 4 DHCP servers, and I have 1 IPAM system that's running. You'll notice that the IP address range these guys are all on. In case you haven't figured it out, it's pretty simple. I've got the 1 network, the 2 network, the 3 network, and the 4 network, and I just happen to throw this guy onto the 1 network. Nice and simple, static address, he's there. IPAM is available as one of the nodes that you can select. Notice how it kicks off a new screen. One thing I didn't cover was the install. And so, first of all, the install literally is you have a member server, you bring it inside your domain. Once it's installed as a member server, you then add the feature called IPAM, and then it goes off and installs it, and it's all set to go. You then have to go through those 6 steps at the very top. The very first one is connect up to an IPAM server. Pretty simple. You simply give it the name of the IPAM server, fully qualified domain name. You then give it credentials that you're attaching as. Second thing up is you go in and you provision the IPAM server. And when you say provision the IPAM server, you're basically going in and identifying how do you want to configure all of the future managed servers inside your environment, using group policy or doing manual changes. Trust me, group policy is a lot easier. Then you go in and you configure your server discovery. Server discovery is simply when do you want to run your schedule. And once they've been identified, then it goes in and actually modifies the system to be able to start server discovery. And then you can select which servers you're going to want to manage with IPAM. It might be that you don't want to manage every single one of your DHCP and DNS servers in IPAM because you don't have the authority to. So you can scope that and finally retrieve the data. Pretty simple 6 steps, actions. They tell you about how to do stuff with some good reference information, where to find out more about it. So kind of a neat thing. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you a little bit about my environment here and my server inventory. So it's already gone off and done a discovery. Just to make sure I'm nice and fresh, I want to go here and select them all, retrieve all server data. It's going to kick off a task basically to go off and to collect up the data from all those systems to bring it into my environment. It's going to tell me that basically if you look up here, there's currently 3, 2, 1. Almost done. There we go. It's all done. So now basically all my data is current and up to date for all those different systems that are involved. They actually come up originally as an unmanaged or unspecified system. When I say unspecified, basically that's after the very first discovery. You have to say this is going to be managed. And what it does is it makes the group policy objects that mean that it's going to basically allow remote access and querying of the system, but it leaves those as a filter in group policy so that they don't get applied to all the servers across the board. You only want them to apply to the servers you manage. So by choosing something that actually is managed, by flipping this little tiny bit from unspecified to managed, all that does is simply is it adds the computer account into the access filter for that particular group policy that says apply this now to this one box. That's how you can get different people managing different servers and not have to worry about doing a lot of hard coding. And you don't have to leave this tool to be able to do it. I've already gone ahead and installed it, obviously. I've already gone ahead and added these guys in because it does take some time to populate this data the very first time. You got to wait for replication, to wait for the GPOs to go, that sort of stuff. Now, the cool stuff that's in there, address space, nice description of what a different thing is between a block and inventory and a range. Let me kind of lay this out for you. So, first off, IP address blocks. IP address blocks are simply your logical grouping for how you decide to manage the bulk of your addresses and in some way, shape, or form that makes sense to you. It doesn't directly map to a single scope, doesn't directly map to a single network. It's simply how you manage bigger chunks of your IP address space. As an example, I want to go in here and I want to say add an IP address block. And I'm going to call this one 192.168.10.0. It is a 24-bit subnet mask. and it's those address ranges because it calculates them for me automatically. And then this is my new wireless network for guests. And it was created and assigned on this date. Owner of it is Joe. Hit OK. I now have a block of addresses that's not controlled by DHCP, but now is documented. That's the biggest part. It's documented. Someone did this action. It was Rick user account that did it at this date, at this time, in the air, reserved some addresses as a block of addresses for somebody, and even tells me if they're utilized or not based on other information it gathers from other areas inside the database. If I start to assign static entries against the 192.168.10.x network, it's going to increment the assigned addresses in this area, and it's going to warn me as I get closer to being full, because you set the threshold where things are. Again, automation, cool stuff like that. IP address ranges are the ones that it discovers that are automatically picked up by DHCP systems. And you can actually see over here, I have an extremely busy network. It's a demo network with very big underutilization. I've got two addresses being used, and then some don't even have any addresses being used inside my environment. And then finally, just under individual IP addresses, these are statically assigned ones that are there if you're interested. One thing that's also very interesting, because this is a database, if I go back over here to my blocks or my ranges, a neat thing you can do is you can go in and you can configure some IPAM settings. Server discovery simply identifies, you know, what are you looking for, which domain are you going to be querying for new systems that you're looking for. Notice that group policy is the option that I chose during the install process for how I'm going to automatically provision new systems and discover stuff. And you can see when the scheduled discovery time is going to go off and to run. Under custom fields, I like this because, again, it's a database, right? Some of them are built in, so you can populate AD site, country, device type, IP address state, blah, 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 blah. Some of them are completely random that you decide to make. It's going to be multi-valued and user-defined. And I want to say custom field value. Did I create that? Yeah, I did. Custom field value. Come on. Oh, I didn't say multi-value. Say yes, Rich Grick. That's what you want to say. There we go. Now when I'm here, I can say building 1, building 2, building 3, building 4, building 5, or building gold, Coast Convention Center, whatever, multi-field. Now when I'm assigning addresses or assigning scopes, I can add this extra data in. Again, this comes from your spreadsheets if you have them that have information in there. And then also I get to do some very basic utilization thresholds that change those little pie charts from being yellow to green to red based on how those things are being allocated that are in there. So if I take a look here as an example and choose something a bit more interesting, like say, I don't know, static addresses. If I can go up here and I can say new IP address that's being used. Look at this lovely little field I can fill in here. So picture this. It's ever happened to you. I need to go in and assign an address to someone for a static server. So I'm going to go in here and it's actually the 10.1.0.123. The MAC address, because I have them memorized, is AABBCCDDEEFF. It is going to be managed by IPAM. It's a, I don't know, let's say it's a VoIP gateway. And it is statically assigned. I signed it today, and it's going to expire in 2 weeks' time. Or, you know what, let's make it 1 week's time. Description is new test VoIP system. Owner is Rick. Asset tag is AA123. Serial number 123456789. And then the real magic comes down to say, make a reservation inside a particular guy. Call this VoIP gateway. Reservation type is for DHCP. Description, temp IP address. And even better, device name, VoIP IP, forward lookup inside Contoso, reverse on this DNS server, reverse lookup inside that guy, inside that DNS server, and custom values. He belongs in my building number, Gold Coast. Add OK. Isn't that way better than having a post-it note that you've now written down? That could be completely delegated out to a non-administrative person to do for you. And that was one. Even better. Right mouse click, create DHCP reservation. Created. Register DNS, host record. Created. PTR record, created. To prove to you that it worked, go in and take a look. That was to number one, DHCP manager. Expand this guy. IPv4 for a scope and reservations. Wipe gateway, created. It's all there. There's no expiry date because that's not part of DNS or DHCP, but that's inside my database. So the neat thing is, if you didn't notice, when I look at this under show me, go back to IPAM here, down to inventory, there is a nice little warning message. Expiry due. So basically the default is 2 weeks before it's due to expire, these start to go into a red or a yellow state to warn you it's about to expire. And you can fix it and extend it if you needed to. So that's cool if you know what it is and what you're looking for, and I happen to know the IP address. What about all those other existing statically assigned addresses that you had that's inside those lovely spreadsheets? Import IP addresses. And of course, they're not on there. I was just handed the updated master list from my co-op. That's right here. Copy them. And bring them in here to my documents folder. Paste. There we go. Absolutely up to date. Where was I? Import. Tasks, import IP addresses. Machine import. Open. 17. Done. I now have all those guys starting to be tracked as of this point forward as being individual trackable assets inside my inventory. And if these address ranges fall within my managed scope of different blocks or of different scopes themselves, it will go off and decrement the number of available addresses or increase them back again as they go away to be able to do reporting against this. And I got some of them are Linux boxes or iPads or servers or whatever. You can do whatever you wanted to. If you wanted to, maybe this is, it says it's Mac right here. I can edit this and say, you know what, it's not really a Mac. It's actually a, like I said, I don't have, where is it? Custom configuration. I did the import in this guy. There it is. Device name, record synchronization. It's not a Mac, it's an iPad, let's say. Update. So it literally is, it's just a database. But it's got a nice front end to it. It's fully scriptable. You can import things like these random addresses of machines that I have in there. You're also able to go in and say, you know what, I also have a bunch of different blocks that I want to be able to track. Change over here to blocks. I can say add task to be able to go in and import IP address blocks. And I happen to have a block file that I have in here. And I now have these static ranges that I've already set up and been using right now from my spreadsheets that are now brought in as well. And again, as I start to assign static entries against these blocks, they're not managed by DHCP, I get the same type of warnings as far as where my levels are for being available or not being available inside my system. The way you do this really just comes down to install it, do some importing of your base data, and then go in and start to do some import manually, some manual additions to get the right format, and then do an export. So if I want to find out how to bring my blocks into this environment, all I do is I simply go up to tasks and I say export. Because I'm in context of my IP address blocks, exported blocks, hit save. I go and take a look at this guy. It literally is just a comma separated file that has all the possible entries that you can import in with some default values that are already inside the database. And then you basically go through and do a field matching for what you currently have. do your data munching and then go off and pull it out and then bring them in, you now have that data in there. You'll probably spend about a day or so probably messing around with this and having fun with it and doing the imports and the exports and stuff like that. Very, very cool stuff. Some other stuff with IP address management. I showed you how to make a manual entry right here, right? And there's a warning saying expiries due, and that sort of stuff. If I go into, where is it? Under blocks. No, let's go into ranges, actually, in here. So you get a request to go off and say, I need to go off and actually install a new IP-based printer, and it's going to be in building number 4. I happen to know building number 4 is this address range right here. I can right mouse click on this guy here and say find and allocate an available IP address. And if you look really quickly, look up here, quick, in progress, looking for an address and checking for DNS. Because just in case this address that it finds it's available happens to have a DNS entry registered because it hasn't expired yet, that probably means that the machine is simply dormant and isn't turned on right now. Anyway, it's going to go off and find one. It's found 1.3, and there was never a DNS record, so it's all set. I can go. And then I can fill in the details. MAC address, 12, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. I think that will do for me. I want to make this guy into a printer. It's going to be in use. It's going to be statically assigned. It's going to be good for now until next month, let's say. Here we go. Description, HP printer. Owner is Josie. Asset tag is ADF123. And I can fill in all the rest of the sort of stuff as before. I'm not going to bother to save some time. But I am going to go off and choose building number 4. Add it in. It's actually making me make a choice here for DHCP, so I should probably do this. It's going to be on that server. It knows what server to go to. Reservation name, printer. It's going to be for a boot P in this case, let's say. And I'm not going to bother with DNS stuff. No, you know, it wants me to. Okay. Contoso on this guy. Reverse there on this guy. And he's good. Where's my bang? I haven't. Oh, device name. That's what it is. HP printer. MAC address is wrong. Okay, let's just go with, that'll work. There we go. Thank you for catching that. So it just went in, because I had all my data populated correctly, I know what's in use, I know what's statically assigned, I know what is being dynamically set out by my DHCP servers, it can now go off and find an address for me, assign it to my system, and then have it go off and work and be happy with everything I need it to. Very, very cool. Where that goes. That guy goes under address inventory eventually, and you'll see him here as the HP printer, and it nicely formats him inside the different systems. Did I miss anything I want to show you here? So let me double check. Deploying your system, blah, da, 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 da. Yeah, it's good. Addresses, I think I got it. I think I got them all. I imported, I exported. Yep, we're good. Switch back to this guy. Yes. Address space management, you basically can use to maintain your own block level hierarchy, which is separate from your levels of scopes. It literally is just simply a blocking for how you want to block stuff off. You can create address blocks and sub-blocks as you like. You can organize them as you like. You can then go off and associate extra data with them if you wanted to. You can create static and dynamic IP address ranges. You can actually make scopes. I didn't show you that, I guess. But you can actually make a DHCP scope directly from in here as you need to. You can find free IP addresses. You can also go, if you didn't notice when I was looking at my individual scopes, it tells you how much is currently in use, how much is available, and it calculates that, and you can see a value for that. And finally, you can do some IP address tracking. Now, with multi-server management and some workflow stuff, you're able to go through and obviously automatically discover servers. It'll go off and query the Active Directory for new individual servers that show up that have different services associated with them. If it finds them, it adds them to the list. I already showed you the drop-down box that says managed or unmanaged or unspecified. They come in as unspecified. So basically, it checks and it finds new DHCP servers that are in your environment that are Windows server-based, 2008 and up, and it'll add them into that inventory. You can then take control of them if you have administrative rights. To be able to add them into your plethora of servers. You can configure and update DHCP options to edit DHCP server properties and scopes. You can go through and monitor DHCP scope utilization, monitor the health of DNS zones, monitor the health of DNS and DHCP altogether. And you can also go through and track changes and view audit entries that happen to be going on with this. So let me show you a little bit about that in just one moment. Okay, we switched over. So, as you can see, it's basically telling me these are my servers that are running right now from a list of DHCP and DNS servers. My original list, in case you missed that point, right up at the top was the one that's auto-discovered for me, and it can tell what role the server is doing as far as the server type is concerned. And then I simply make sure that I've gone in and changed this guy to say managed or unmanaged or unspecified, and then it goes through and gradually brings that data over. Once it's in, down here is the cool stuff of what you can do with it. Say, for instance, if I wanted to go in and right-mouse click on a server, I can go off and create a brand new scope on number one, go through and let's make, 10, scope name is test scope, description is wireless test, IP address is 192.168. 11.10, that's go 1, 192.168, 11.254. I'll make it so that it works for 3 hours. Do I need to do any exclusions? Do I want it to allow it to do dynamic updates? All the stuff you would expect to see to be able to do things. And I'm just going to go ahead and say, go ahead and create it. It's going to go reach out and basically create that for me on that individual box. I don't have to go and visit it. It does it all through PowerShell. Now, remember that scenario where you might need to go off and do an edit or a change? Say you end up with a help desk call because for some reason the servers in the DNS server that everybody's pointing to as their primary DNS server seems to be acting up. You need to send it over to a failover, the second side. How in the past, how would you know which scopes would be using that particular IP address for a DNS server? What would you do? Well, you right mouse click on all your DHCP systems that are there, and you want to go in, you say, you know what, let's modify server properties. No, not that. Options. And I want to do, instead of an add, I want to do a find and replace. And I want to look for my DNS server, and I'm looking for 10.2.0.10, which is acting up. Replace it with 10.1.0.10, add that to the list, and then hit OK. It goes through, scans them all. Only the place where it finds 10.2.0.10 will it go in and sub that one over with the new one. It leaves the other ones all fine by itself. If you need to do a mass overwrite, you could do that as well. If you need to do a replacement, you could do that as well. If you need to add something in, you can do that as well because it's all using PowerShell. Pretty simple stuff for being able to do that. Individual scopes, where they are. You can see here these guys, we have some that are overutilized, some that are underutilized. If I want to go in and take a look at this test scope as an example that was already created, I can edit it and take a look at it to make any changes that I need to. Individual options or advanced settings, it simply expands and gives me more information. It's there. If I need to make any changes to it. I also have the ability to, for instance, take an individual scope and I can say duplicate that scope. And it will pre-fill in the data that I need to be able to make a new one to be able to save someplace else. So again, if you're going for some kind of scale because you have to go off and add a whole bunch of scopes, you don't have to go in and input this information all manually. And from a monitoring perspective, I can see which ones happen to be in a happy state or not. I've got a couple of warnings there for my individual servers because it can't talk to the higher levels for Contoso. And then I've got the ability to group my different servers together for different properties. Pretty cool stuff for what you can do. Flip back. Get my clicker. And that was multi-server management. You're able to go off and to build your server inventory. You can manually do it. You can discover and add servers. You can go in and edit different properties directly on the server itself. You can manage individual scopes. You can do find and replace. You can also duplicate to make things faster. And you get an overall view of health for how healthy your scopes are. Do you have enough address headroom? Are you starting to run out of headroom? You even have the ability, but I don't have the ability to show you that data right now. You can actually track trends and find that you have a usage trend going up in different areas and get warnings about this ahead of time. Very, very cool. We also have the ability to do some external data integration. In this case, you've got something from with Active Directory domain services. So because it uses PowerShell, you can very easily go in and use some scripting that'll go through to be able to import and export information from PowerShell, sorry, not from PowerShell, from IPAM, and put it into Active Directory DNS, sorry, Active Directory sites and services if you wanted to track your subnets as opposed to your different sites. And it can go reverse the other way as well, identify all the subnets that are inside your Active Directory sites and make sure that they are represented correctly and accurately inside your IPAM database as well. Very simple process to be able to go off and do that. The directory service goes in and shows the topology. You guys should know this from your Active Directory days, the idea of having the subnets associated with your sites correctly inside Active Directory, and then the ability to have that stuff brought inside your environment for IPAM. Now, as far as external data goes, you saw me go through and do an export of data to give you an example of what that file looks like. I've taken that one file just as an example for my, here's an example file for what it looks like. Let me go in and just turn on a larger font so you guys can read this. There we go. This is a sample. I make a static entry inside my environment for an IP address. What are all the possible fields that I can reference inside there? And what is the current value for the one entry that I had? And the idea is that make a static entry, export it to be able to see what all the possible column headings are, take a look at your spreadsheets that you have, and then choose how to format that data inside of it, and then do a sample import to bring it in. And as you can see, there's an awful lot of information, asset tags, descriptions, reservation names, to be able to bring them in. When you bring it in the first time and it doesn't work correctly, both of mine just worked, what happens is basically it spits out an error message that tells you which fields are not supported. And then you can go back to your sheet and you can remove those columns and you can try it again to bring it in. If you still has another one because it only can display so many error messages at a time, you can then go in and bring it in again for more information. And then eventually you'll get it to the point where you can actually bring in all of your data when it gets in there. It will take some massaging to bring it in. The same thing applies if you can dump out, maybe routing tables from your routers or something like that, or MAC addresses that are being used from all your current DHCP-issued systems, or maybe you're using a DHCP server that's on an embedded box or something like that. If you can dump that information out, or even do a screen capture of that information with a screen scrape, you can bring it into your IPAM environment besides you having to go in and type them all in. That's just simply with some CSV files, and then you can import them in. All these things are able to be done, obviously, through a PowerShell interface as well. I'm showing you the GUI at this point in time. The idea is you can import and export through the UI. You then are able to go in and use PowerShell to be able to pull that information. You can pull it from whatever source you like. If you wanted to, you can pull it from Active Directory. A neat thing that was announced, when was that? I think it was back in, it was back in the late June, early July time frame. The Open Management Framework, or the OMF, is available for vendors to use to be able to allow you to interact with their hardware, like switches, like Arista switches or different types of switches, and you can query it with PowerShell to be able to go in and turn ports on and turn ports off and do stuff because it's a nice management infrastructure and standards-based. You can do the same thing and query your switches and pull information from them directly from PowerShell, potentially, if they support that. Go through and do a background task and task scheduler to run it on a regular basis or at trigger times, and then finally go in and do a synchronization to bring it into your IPAM database and make sure it's synchronized in both directions. One thing that also is a good source of information for some people in their environments, especially with virtualization, is System Center Virtual Machine Manager. It has the network fabric that you're going to be identifying for your different switches that you can then go in and have information inside of there. It contains IP address pools, utilization and stats. It contains virtual machine address properties, which different instances are using these different systems, and also some other logical details as well. That's all inside this one locked up database of SCVMM with Service Pack 1. There is a PowerShell script that is included with that to be able to go in and to basically export that information over and import it directly inside my IPAM database. And then from there, I can now start to track on a virtual side of things, specifically utilization details, because SCVMM has the ability to be its own DHCP system and its own release reservation system for the VMs that are inside of it and under its control inside of its network. Some summary information about IPAM so far, where we're at. Well, address space management is definitely a challenge. IPAM is one solution you can use to make it into a better space for you. It allows you to migrate address spaces from all your legacy tools, be they spreadsheets, be they pieces of paper, be they other databases, third-party tools, and gives you the ability to do some real lifecycle management of stuff. As I made an entry or reservation for a particular entry, it's something that's able to go in and to warn me about before it's about to expire and then allow me to take action on that. It allows me to do auto-discovery, to be able to do scheduled stuff on demand, and also do some disjointed domain namespace as well for what you're looking at managing. I'm focused at the root level of my domain, which is contoso.com. I could also be subdomains as well. It does service monitoring for simplified entry, and also goes through and does some very cool network auditing. You know what? I didn't show you the auditing. Let me show you that. That's a cool thing you can do with the auditing side of things. Where is it? So down at the very bottom for the event catalog, first of all those different activities that I've been doing on that individual server are all tracked inside the database and local in here, and I'm able to go off and filter and find stuff. I'm also going to be able to track IP addresses that are in use. So in this case, I want to say, show me, of course now I forget what my IP address was. Let me go in and just quickly take a look. I have a client system that's right here. And oh, nice. I'll just delay the activation until after the demo, if you don't mind. 10.1.1.6, so I'm kind of cheating, because I know what the address is on this box. But I can go through and I can say, back on my server, for the event catalog for IP address tracking, 10.1.1.6 that was in use, I want to find out who is using that, and I want to find out for the month of September, the date of the 12th, let's say, 2012, and then go for 9/14/2012, search. And I can find that that IP address came up in these event logs that were simply residual information that's out there that's inside my database because it was harvested from my DHCP servers. No matter where that system was, I can find out what it was. In this case, I know that it happened to be on a particular host name. And I can track all the times that it was accessed, it was updated, and also possibly changed as well. And it was done through looking for a new lease and also from overall authentication purposes. You could go through and get even more interesting if you happen to know what the address format is for MAC addresses. You can actually go through and do searches for MAC addresses based on type. There is a website that I thought I referenced inside the slides, but I didn't, so I'll make sure that I update this. I'll put the name of it up here in case you guys are interested, if you're not familiar with this. Notepad. This site right here is really cool. I was mucking around with this a little while ago. This guy right here is a database of MAC addresses assigned by vendor, And it'll allow you to go through and basically say, you know, for the vendor ID portion of the MAC address, the first couple of hex bytes that are in there, who has it? And so, for instance, if I take a look, I can't show you this because I don't have internet access on that machine. But if I just type in Apple as an example, there are 54 entries of possible MAC addresses that people have reported that is used by Apple computer, registered by Apple computer, for the iPad, for iPhones, for MacBook Airs, for MacBook Pros. They all have the same type of hardware, and they all have the same type of MAC address that's in there. In this case, for Apple Inc., it is 001B63. That is one tag of addresses that has been assigned to the Apple Corporation, as one example. You can mess around in there and take a look at it. Personally, I think you're going to get a little bit more fun by going through and looking at your own existing MAC addresses that are inside your existing DHCP servers, and then knowing your naming convention, identifying, oh, this one appears to be my Samsung slates. This one happens to be my Nexus tablets and that sort of stuff, to be able to come up with different types of queries that are out there. Very neat stuff from an auditing perspective. And again, you don't have to be an administrator to audit that because you're simply doing a database query. Deployment, customization, and management, it really is an agentless architecture. There's nothing to install on your systems. This works with 2008, 2008 R2, and 2012 DHCP, DNS, and other systems. It is able to go in and allow you to put in customized metadata. I added a new field called building. That new field now pops up whenever I do anything related to IPS management that I have a choice of selecting. And I can even go through and modify that through the GUI interface or through a PowerShell interface. PowerShell for integration, powerful filter and search capabilities. My one ask that I would have liked to have had, a calendar dropdown as opposed to having to type in the date, but didn't make it, I guess, in the feature set. And finally, disaster recovery, multiple instance deployment, enterprise scale. Basically, it's a local database on this local box that you are able to go in and to back up that WID database, Windows installable database, and be able to bring it back in again to other systems. You're not able to replicate it elsewhere. It's a local instance only. And you are able to scale this by simply carving up a manual instance of how many servers you're looking after to be able to do some level of scale. You can increase the frequency of the polling intervals that you have to be able to get more accurate data as things go on. And you're able to then go off and start to unleash yourself on the world of IPAM. Now, one example of some people that were actually instrumental in using this, a group called ConvergentComputing.com, basically were looking for an issue because they had a very large amount of virtualized systems that were coming up and coming down, coming up and coming down, and basically consuming their IP address space. And then moving things around, moving individual boxes around, also required addresses to all of a sudden be acquired or let go and expired and different things. In this case, they have their headquarters in Silicon Valley. They got on-premise. They've got colos they have to worry about. And basically, they were the ones, or one of the ones, that were instrumental in the TAP program to create IPAM in the first place. And some of their requirements basically fell into the scope of what is part of and what is now IPAM. Scenario that they used this for basically was doing a customized IPAM with tagging to map out their existing address spaces with all the different devices in the data centers to be able to determine if it's coming from this networking switch or coming from this particular address range. They knew if they could find out which of the blades and which of the racks they were actually referring to, which is very, very cool. Their old way of working with spreadsheets basically and Visio diagrams became useless because obviously they were outdated. They started using IPAM for audit tracking. They could actually now go down and track down to the machine level for what was being used. And it's extremely lightweight, and it actually works quite well. Some resources for IPAM. The good thing is that they've done a good job with doing some great technical articles. You can very quickly get this guy up and running without any other change in infrastructure besides having an IPAM server up and installed as a feature on your Server 2012 box. You don't have to have any agents installed on 2008, 2002 to manage them. Once you've got them, you can go through and literally walk through your step-by-step for how to go off and do your install. I would say probably the trickiest part for me when I did my install for the demo environment that I created was really just that one piece of waiting for replication to take place for my group policy, because that's how I was provisioning the auto discovery of my servers. And I simply got impatient waiting for the replication to take place of that group policy object. Once that settled down and everything had replicated across to be able to find my systems, I then kicked off a discovery process. Once that was kicked off, it populated that server list, and it was a very quick managed drop-down blocks to get it to go into work. Once that was done, I then was starting to able to go off and to play with IPAM and all the story that it happens to be. And with that, I actually have a 15-minute chunk of time for some questions and some observations. And I have three things of maple syrup to give away in the orange shirt in the back corner, sir. Yes. Okay, so the question is basically, so I can repeat in case you guys didn't hear that. You got 2003 boxes, and you want to be able to manage them with IPAM. I'm cutting to the chase here. Can you do it? No. Only with 2008, 2008 R2, and 2012 are the target hosts that you can use for automatic server discovery management. Does that stop you from importing and making all your stuff come to life inside IPAM to get ready for it? No, because you can put whatever you want inside this database manually to get it so it matches and mirrors it. But you're not going to get the advantage, obviously, of being able to go in and say, search for all of this particular DHCP entry in my scope option, and then find this and replace it with that. That won't take place because it has to happen on 2008, 2008 R2, or 2012 DHCP server, unfortunately. I'm sorry about that. But as a condolence, I will give you some maple syrup for that one there. Another question? Yes, sir. Right there. Sorry, ma'am. I didn't see. Great question. How does this work in a restricted environment where you got firewalls between your IPAM server and where those guys happen to be? Like, for instance, your DMZ zone, that sort of stuff. How would this work? You are going to have to be able to open up the ability to work with WMF, Windows Management Framework version 3.0. It goes across with WinRM on 443 for secure authentication between it. And then all communication happens through PowerShell through WMF. So really it's just 443 that has to be open. And then you'll have to add those servers in. And then they become managed by IPAM. And it goes through your firewall, provided you have the ports open on your firewall. So that should be fine. With your internal networks, obviously, right? For that. Maple syrup. That was a good question. No one's actually asked the one there before. Let's be nice to this side of the room. Anyone over here in the back? Nope, you guys are falling asleep. So how about you, sir? Multi-tenancy, separated by firewalls, looking after multiple customers, having a centralized IPAM infrastructure, is it possible? I'm going to have to say, unfortunately, no, because it does require access to group policy to be able to do the manual configuration, actually the automated configuration. You might want to take a look at the TechNet article, because I believe that there is a manual way of doing this, where you have to manually add different systems in, but generally speaking, this is designed for an in-house inside your environment. It's not designed for multi-tenancy, but you could probably jig some stuff together to make it happy and to make it work. And you, sir, won my last maple syrup to give out for TechEd. Anyone else? Anything else? Yes, sir. First row of the chairs. The question is IPAM open and available to go in and talk to and adhere to the 80-20 split scope recommendation for 2008 and 2008 R2 systems? And the answer is basically, it reads it however you've designed it, it imports it and uses it, and then you'd have to go off and configure it. This doesn't cover a resilient level of DHCP failover. That's part of the DHCP server itself. It's separate from that. This literally is simply going to query how busy and how full your scopes are they in use or not? And then you can deduce based on the utilization if you're going to be running out of space or not, and it's there. So it will see the additional addresses being covered by a different DHCP server as well, and they just won't be used or won't be allocated, and that's it. So it'll show up, but it doesn't do anything specifically to say balance this out across the different systems for that. Yes, sir. Space requirements for the database. Your mileage may vary based on how many servers you're managing and how big of a log you want to track. They don't have sizing guidelines that I've been able to find so far. It's a local database off a local box. Scalability-wise, simply managing and monitoring your individual systems to find out how much space it's consuming and then having to carve it off to smaller numbers. Yeah?
With the IP administrator's role, is it possible to lock it down so someone can request IP addresses in certain scopes that not others?
Can you carve down the delegation of IP address space so that it goes to certain scopes and not others when people go off and to make different entries? No, it does not. It is not that granular. It simply says, are you allowed to do address space management as a whole? Are you allowed to do auditing as a whole? Are you allowed to do automation as a whole? And that's it. It doesn't go down to individual scopes. Unfortunately, no. Before you all slink off, most of you already have. Don't forget evaluations, if you please. You'll need to get a hold of me, Rick Claus, Senior Technical Evangelist. On Twitter is RicksterCDN. Thank you very much for your time for coming. I was going to say I could take some more questions if you like, but you guys are all tired, so if you want to have some more questions, come on down and chat. Otherwise, go beat the rush for coffee.